Is Steyer? Proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Meredith Steer, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Rogelio Perez. The justice system demands that all sentences be based on a solid foundation comprised of accurate information. Only upon a foundation of facts can a court construct a reasonable sentence. However, in Mr. Perez's case, the foundation supporting his sentence was infused with damaging and prejudicial inaccuracies. Inaccuracies that included the district court's mistaken belief that Mr. Perez had a background that involved selling firearms, when Mr. Perez had no prior history that involved firearms in any capacity. Inaccuracies that included the government's mistaken assertion that Mr. Perez's current offense involved multiple firearms.
And but it did involve one. I mean,
it did involve
everybody
one.
Everybody understands that he's asked, you know, can you throw in some toys or whatever the word was, and he doesn't seem to have shock or trouble doing that. He brings the gun and sells it.
I disagree, Your Honor. I believe that he was requested by the CS multiple times before he actually did consent to sell a single firearm. And it is a single firearm that was at issue here, not, as the government contended, multiple firearms. Additionally, there were government misstatements that greatly expanded the substance and severity of Mr. Perez's criminal history, which created a historic pattern of serious drug crime that otherwise did not exist. These serious inaccuracies pervaded the entire sentencing procedure, and due to the court's focus on Mr. Perez's background, they directly impeded the district court's ability to construct a reasonable sentence.
What were the actual prior drug offenses on this record?
In 1995, Mr. Perez had a drug conviction for a $50 sale. He received probation for this offense. In 1996, he received probation for a $20 sale. And I believe when he was 17, he had a possession charge.
Okay. Doesn't one of them get kicked up when he violates his probation?
He
it's
did.
The second one, right?
The second one, he did violate probation and then received criminal history points for that conviction.
So that's he got 5 years, right?
When he did, which he served concurrent to the other offense, and the other offense also was calculated.
Which one was that?
He had a robbery charge that occurred, I believe, in 98, I believe. It was very, okay. These are all offenses that took place when he was a younger man. They took place decades ago. His last prior conviction was over 13 years ago.
You're focusing on inaccuracies in the way these things are described at the sentencing hearing. It's my recollection that the pre-sentence report accurately reports everything.
You're right, Your Honor. It does report everything accurately. However, after the government makes its presentation of facts to the district court specifically and twice specifically related its reliance on the government's presentation of facts. So while the PSR may have had accurate information, the government acknowledged that it was relying on the district court acknowledged it was relying on the government's presentation. This case is virtually identical to a case that this court held in United States v. Durham. The comment there was a single reference to a defendant's criminal background that involved a prior history of guns, when in fact the defendant had no such prior history. There was a single reference made by the district court, and this court held that that single reference was clearly erroneous due to the fact that there was no such prior history.
Well, now the district court at one point says that Perez had earned his career offender status. And he says that quite a bit later, after the government has inaccurately summarized a number of these prior events, whether it's gun or guns plural, or whether it's the severity of the prior drug offenses. But, I mean, Perez does have a criminal record.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, he qualifies as somebody with a criminal record. I don't know if it's the worst record I've ever seen. I would actually tell you that it's not. But he had a record, and it was enough to put him in the career criminal category, and that's what drives the sentence.
We're not disagreeing that he had a record, and we're not disagreeing that the career offender status was technically accurate. However, Mr. Perez made a mitigation argument that the career offender status overstated his criminal history based on the nature and the remoteness of his prior offenses. However, based on the information that was presented by the government to the district court was unable to accurately even review this argument because it had inaccurate facts about the number of career offender predicates, the fact that Mr. Perez had not received multiple serious drug predicates, the fact that he had not received a 7-year sentence for a prior sentence for a prior drug crime, and the fact that the current offense did not involve multiple guns. There are multiple inaccuracies that were presented that directly and critically impact the mitigation arguments made by Mr. Perez that the career offender status was overstating his criminal history. Furthermore, we believe that the government inaccuracies presented a portrait of Mr. Perez that was supplemented by the district court's own erroneous belief that Mr. Perez had a background that involved selling guns. We can look through the transcript of the sentencing, and it's very clear that the district court believed that the background was involved multiple firearms, and that because of this background, there was a pattern of behavior that Mr. Perez had not been deterred from. This isn't an accurate belief, since there had been no prior history that involved firearms in any capacity. And again, back to Durham, this court believed that Durham, one single reference could potentially, that it was not improbable that a single reference could influence the district court's sentencing decision, and articulated that very low threshold of being not improbable. I believe this is an exact case where it is not improbable that this inaccurate information at least influenced the sentencing court's decision. And because of that, it affects the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of the proceedings. Mr. Perez had a background, and he deserved to be sentenced on the basis of an accurate understanding of his background, but that isn't what happened in his case. He was sentenced based on misunderstandings and misperceptions that exaggerated what his background really was.
Okay, so I'm interested in the fact that this is the part of your argument that you're stressing here, the inaccurate information. Can I take it that you are not, I would actually think this would be a sensible thing on your part, but that you're not relying on any notion that the district judge was treating the sentencing guidelines as obligatory in any way?
We believe that there were some comments that were made that were similar to comments made in Panis. However, we also believe that the comments that were made by the district court identify that under a certain circumstances he would be willing to have departed from the guidelines. In this situation, he did not have an accurate understanding of Mr.
Right.
Perez's
background. Right, because he says, I do it when I think it's the right thing to do. And the way I read his comments, putting to one side your argument about whether this was based on solid information or not solid information, but he says, it looks to me like the guideline sentence is the right one here.
Under his misunderstanding of the information, he did make that comment.
So you're really stressing the factual aspect of your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that these factual inaccuracies, they occurred throughout the government's sentencing memorandum, throughout the sentencing transcript, that wrongly indicate the number of career offender predicates. They wrongly indicate that Mr. Perez received multiple serious drug offense predicates. They wrongly indicate that he had previously served a 7-year sentence for a drug crime. And they wrongly indicate that Mr. Perez had multiple guns involved in the current offense. We believe that all of these accuracies combined created a misperception of who Mr. Perez was that definitely affected the sentence.
At the 3553A level?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time at rebuttal.
That would be
fine.
Thank
you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Jenkins.
May it please the Court, Counsel, Lindsay Jenkins on behalf of the United States. I'd like to just briefly touch upon the last matter that counsel just discussed. The district court did not presume reasonableness at sentencing. Instead,
right, I take it she's more or less.
It would be highly unusual in 2014 for a veteran district judge to have misunderstood Booker and Rita. So.
Yes, and the government would agree. And just to put a fine point on it, I would simply note that the district court specifically stated that if it ever saw a case where the guidelines called it the right way, after meaningful consideration of the 3553A factors.
Right, he says that, and the thing that concerns me about the case is the inaccuracies that Ms. Steyer was talking about. This case looks one way under the district court's understanding of the facts, but it doesn't seem impossible to me that he might have used the 3553A discretion that he has differently had he realized one after another, the difference is that it wasn't multiple guns, that it wasn't, you know, repeated lengthy drug convictions. Mr. Perez's record is actually, frankly, at the low end of records that I can remember seeing over the years. So you just wonder if, taken in the aggregate, these failures to be precise about the factual background of the record yielded a sentence that even this district judge might not have thought the right one if he'd been corrected.
And, Your Honor, I think the record taken as a whole would show that overall the district court was provided with accurate information concerning the number of firearms, and it was just one firearm involved in the offense.
But he doesn't say that, and the government doesn't say that.
Nor did the defendant object to the government's misrepresentation on that point, and in fact the defense counsel then made a point to explain to the district court judge, Your Honor, it was only one firearm. It was a firearm requested by the CS.
Well, that's an objection. I mean, so he's saying, he's trying to clarify to the district court. I don't think there's any waiver or anything of the sort.
No, certainly. I just wanted to point out that both defense counsel and government counsel made clear, at least in the initial portions of their representation, as well as the PSR made clear, that there was only one firearm involved. It is correct to say that the government misused the word or used the word guns or firearms plural at one point in its sentencing
maybe
presentation.
Even 2 points, yeah.
The district court also used the plural when it discussed that matter. But what the district court was relying on when it was imposing sentence under the 3553A factors was the overall nature of the seriousness of the defendant's criminal record.
But it's pathetic. I mean, you know, there's just not that much in this record. There are these little state drug crimes, you know, the one with probation, the other where he blows it and he does get the 5-year sentence. Then he's got a different crime, and the sentencing judge is talking about prior involvement in violent offenses with drugs and guns.
And I guess what I'd like to relay is that, you know, the defendant had 4 felony convictions at the time he stood before the district court for sentencing.
Right.
Three
and how
of those
old were they?
Two were from 1996.
95
and 96. And then there were 2 prior crime of violence convictions for 1998 was robbery and aggravated battery.
And so the judge says, I'm looking at page 17 of the sentencing transcript, I do not get too many cases with this heavy a background. What? 4 felonies? That's it?
And I think that the record would, the transcript reflects that what the district court was referring to is the fact that the defendant had one more career offender conviction than necessary to qualify as a career offender. He had 3...
And really, honestly, in your experience, how unusual is that?
I frankly think that 3 qualifying convictions for career offender, it's not the most unusual thing.
How many ACCA cases do you bring? I mean, you know, you have to have 3.
You have to have 2. You have to have 2 career... I guess what I'm trying to say is that you need 2 career offender convictions to qualify as a career offender.
Right.
And this defendant
he's
had 3. In
you know,
addition...
It's pretty unusual, though, for to count too seriously 2 street-level drug deals, the $20, the $50, where the sentence is just probation until he screws up later.
Which is exactly what the defense attorney argued at the sentencing hearing.
He argued, right.
He argued
but did
that
the judge get it?
And the judge did, but the judge made very clear that what was disturbing to him was the pattern of drug sales in the instant offense, as well as the fact that the defendant had been sentenced to substantial terms of incarceration on those older offenses, and they had not taught him anything. And as a result of taking those considerations into account, as well as the mitigating arguments that the defendant made at the sentencing hearing, the district court determined that the low end of the guidelines was appropriate because the defendant had never gotten the message along the way.
So he's had 1 5-year sentence and 1 7-year sentence. Is that it? The 5 years after the revocation and the 7 years on the other crime?
2 of the convictions resulted in 5 years to run concurrent because one of those convictions was a revocation
Right, so you said 5 years and 7 years
right.
in the past.
The other The other sentences did not result in any lengthy terms of incarceration. One may have had a short period of time, a number of days in jail.
And this is one of the heaviest records that Judge Koukouras has ever seen?
That was his representation on the record. Whether or not that's actually the case, I would not know. I do think that it is.
Good guess is it's not true, but go ahead.
I guess a couple of other things I'd like to note, because I think that there are some remarks that defense counsel made at the sentencing hearing that should be clarified for purposes of the record. At the transcript on page 11, defense counsel took the opportunity to make sure that the district court was aware that none of the defendant's prior convictions for crimes of violence involved firearms. That was made very clear to the district court that the prior convictions for crimes of violence did not involve the use of firearms. And I believe he explained the circumstances under which those convictions came to be. So there certainly was no representation by defense counsel or even the government that...
But then the judge says, I believe the government's version, not defense counsel's version. What do we do with that?
Well, when the district court said that, what the district court said was that it believed... It said that the government had those facts right. That the district court was referring to is the facts that the government recites at page 5 of the transcript, which is that there were 6 separate sales of crack cocaine in which the defendant was at the ready to sell crack cocaine to the defendant.
The offense of conviction, offenses if you want to say, are what they are. You know, this is really all about career offender and what the past added to the sentence, because obviously he would have had quite a different range if the career offender element were not there, and even if it's correct, the 3553A discretion might have been exercised differently.
Right, and I certainly understand that. I took the question to mean when the district court said, you know, the government has those facts right or the prosecutor has those facts right.
Well, that's what you think he meant, and I guess I'm just worried. It could be what he meant. I don't.
In reading the transcript, I believe that the reference that the district court makes is that the defendant had the drugs at the ready. And if you look at the transcript in which the government refers to items at the ready, what it's referring to is the 6 sales of crack cocaine in a short period of time in which it was not very difficult for the defendant to be able to meet with the CS to procure the crack cocaine. In a second separate statement, I think in the next line, the government makes clear that there was only one firearm for sale. Granted, the government then improperly used the plural, and I certainly don't dispute that. But it's very... From the government's reading of the transcript and from what the district court said, in terms of the government having the facts right, this goes to the district court's discussion of the fact that the pattern of conduct by the defendant following a conviction of 5 years and 7 years, he comes back to engage in the same conduct over a continuous period of time, selling crack cocaine to the cooperating source over a several month long period. That was concerning conduct to the district court that indicated to the district court that the defendant had not learned his lesson and had not been deterred. And as a result, a sentence at the low end of the guidelines was appropriate. Unless there's any further questions, the government would rest on its brief.
All right,
could you just address a little more specifically our discussion of the firearms point in Durham?
The distinction that I would make in Durham is, in Durham, the district court makes a comment about a firearm having been involved in the defendant's criminal history, that one of his criminal convictions or some aspect of his criminal history involved the use of a firearm. That's not what happened here. The district court did use the plural. Although there are places in the record where the parties made clear that there was only one. And of course, here, even if there were some misapprehension or misunderstanding as to the ratio of the number of drug convictions to crime of violence convictions, here we're still talking about a PSR that lays out the fact that this defendant does have 4 felony convictions, 2 of which are drug convictions, and 2 of which are crime of violence convictions. Here, we're not, unlike Durham, this is not a situation in which there's nothing in the record to support the district court's statement that firearms were involved in the defendant's past. In this case, there are four felony convictions that exist, and they're stated and spelled out in the PSR, whether they're substantial or whether they're small, which the district court addressed, by the way. The difference here is that those facts actually do exist, and as noted in the government's brief, the district court wasn't required to pretend like one of the felony convictions for a manufacturer delivery conviction didn't exist. It certainly doesn't increase his criminal history level. It certainly doesn't have any bearing on the actual career offender status, but he doesn't have to pretend like it isn't out there, because it is out there, and he does have two prior drug convictions. Unless there are any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Steyer?
Yes.
Your Honors, I'd first like to clarify. Durham involved the virtually identical scenario. It was a career offender who had a firearm that was involved in his current offense. In Durham, there was no firearm involvement in his background, exactly as it was with Mr. Perez. Mr. Perez had no guns whatsoever, no charged conduct that involved guns in his background whatsoever. And in fact, Durham's case, the defendant in Durham actually had a murder charge in his background. This is a situation where Durham was at one level, and Mr. Perez's case has been taken to a much more severe level. Here, there is no reason to believe that there were guns in his prior history. Second of all, the offense that was mischaracterized as a career offender predicate, we aren't asking that to be ignored, but we are asking that it should be reviewed on the basis of accurate information. By characterizing it as a career offender predicate, it increases the relevance and the appropriateness of the career offender designation, which is exactly what Mr. Perez was arguing in his mitigation arguments, that the career offender designation overstated his criminal history. By characterizing a minor offense as a career offender predicate, that is definitely overstating the relationship to his career offender predicates.
Just to be clear, though, under the guidelines, the career offender designation is technically correct.
Technically it is, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, the argument was that it is overstating, and that is an argument that is also reinforced in the guidelines themselves.
Of course.
I'd also like to clarify that Mr. Perez has only ever served 36 months as the longest term of incarceration. So while he had been sentenced to other sentences, his term of incarceration had been 36 months, and he had been out on parole and had been out in the public for over a decade at the time of this most recent offense. That shows that he had multiple paths to take, and he did not always choose the wrong path as was proposed by the district court. Again, there's a ongoing misunderstanding of Mr. Perez's background that the district court continues to reinforce. The horrors of his background, the ongoing nature of these offenses, and the fact that he had continued to choose the wrong path. Your Honors, I see that I'm out of time. Thank you. We respectfully request that you vacate Mr. Perez's sentence in order. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And you were appointed, and we appreciate the assistance.